Dan, when you were a kid, when you were growing up, did you ever go to that moment with somebody where you felt like you could be like physically like comedic? Like the Three Stooges. Did you ever go knock, 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 knock? Whoop, whoop, whoop. Did you ever do that with anybody?
And like hit them?
Sure.
Or like smack their head?
Yeah. Did you ever like slap somebody physically because it was funny to you?
No, I don't like that stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't like people doing that to me. So I don't like doing that to other people.
So treat people the way you want to be treated, because that's the way humanity works.
Bingo.
Now you're listening to the Dan and Cody podcast, episode 143, where slapping ain't okay.
This is the Dan and Cody podcast.
This is it. Right here, Cody. You put on those headphones and you go to work.
Why are you yelling?
This is where our message is heard.
It's time to get hype. Say it with me.
What are we saying?
Dan and Cody.
Dan and Cody.
Dan and Cody.
Meet Dan and Cody podcast.
Dan and Cody podcast.
Dan and Cody podcast.
Get some.
Dan and Cody podcast.
Hot damn. What's up,
buddy.
Dude?
Hey, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
So, Columbus Day.
Yeah.
Is it Columbus Day?
I think it's Indigenous Peoples Day now.
Oh, they don't call it Columbus Day?
Nah.
It was called Columbus Day.
For a long time.
Chrissy Columbo.
I think in your phone, it still says Columbus Day. I think like in your calendar, those preset like federal holidays.
Right.
It still says Columbus Day. But even saying that today, I feel like people give you like a side eye. They're like, huh?
Right, right.
This is Indigenous Peoples Day.
So Columbus Day, just for those of you out there.
It's a big stain on it now. Big stain. But you know what?
Who gets the days off?
The feds.
It's a federal holiday, right?
Prop store and the feds.
I mean, it's funny because it's like, it's the day that we celebrate Columbus coming to the States, and as you say, it's Indigenous People Day, but it's really what it is. It is the taking away of the land of the Indigenous people. It was the start to the end of all Native Americans.
It's the day of not even Native Americans. They don't want to call it Native Americans Day because they weren't Americans. It was not America.
It was not America.
It was a land.
Right.
So that's where the whole like Indigenous people.
Okay. Okay. I get that.
But here's the thing. Like whether you like Columbus's quote unquote discovery of this land that we live on.
Right.
Regardless of whether you like that or not, we're still products of that. A lot of us who live in the United States today.
Right.
Have ancestors and such that can be traced back to the group of folks that came over at whatever different times because this land was found upon. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I mean, fuck what you heard in your fancy storybooks.
Right.
Coming up on land that isn't yours is never funny or like easy,
right?
Like you gotta what do they call it? You gotta break a couple eggs
to make a scramble,
right?
Sure.
And by eggs, I mean a ton of human beings had to die.
A lot of people died. I mean, it was truly genocide.
Yeah,
I mean, like there was
and disease.
There was a disease killed a ton of natives. And, you know, you bring what you reap what you sow.
And we're all products of that.
We're all products
of it. A lot of us.
Absolutely. I think that's true. You know, it was, it's interesting because you talk about like the frontier and this new world that everybody came over to and time progressed. And then you had like these, like kind of the Indian Wars through 1800 to 1900, right? Like the true pushing aside of the native people out west. We did it when we first came to the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
when we pushed people aside, and then they moved further inland, and then we just kept expanding, right?
Yeah.
So Sunday, I went to more. I was a guest on the More Gooder Than podcast.
Holla.
Holla at my boys and Dan's boys, Chris and Corey and Donnie. We talked about the two movies, Tombstone and mm-hmm. Wyatt Earp.
Nice.
And it's interesting to kind of like see these parallels of like being able to go out into the wild and, you know, some of these areas, there's no law. The right. law is as good as the people in the town. So if nobody's willing to enforce the law, lawlessness will run rampant. It's more of an idea. And without people willing to enforce it, it doesn't exist. And so it's like you kind of you definitely see that in these two movies.
Yeah.
I mean, Tombstone is like a Hollywood bag of excitement, right? And Wyatt Earp is a much more comprehensive, you know, I guess you could say pseudo true representation of Wyatt Earp and the time that you lived in.
But in that time, though, regardless of movie in Hollywood, you would get like passerbys that would come into town that you've right. set up.
Right.
And they'd be like, what's the deal here?
Right.
And someone would have to like come meet them at the front of the town and be like, here's the law, you know?
That's how it worked?
I think so. You know, they always like sort of skate into town and...
Well, there's signs,
people
right?
are like cleaning or like throwing out bath water or like shucking corn.
What was the big one? Like you come into Dodge City.
Yeah.
All you do, you bring your guns and you check them at the sheriff's office.
Right.
Sign says, all firearms are checked at the sheriff's office. When you leave town, we'll give them back to you.
Mm.
So it's like... You can have guns all day long, but you can't have them in town.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that law?
I wouldn't abide by that back in those days.
I think it'd be a little nerve-wracking, right?
Yeah, I'd be like, these are my guns.
Right.
These my property.
But if nobody else has a gun, why would that be so hard?
But I think you would say like, hey, you know what? This isn't the town for me then, and we're going to keep on riding. We're going to roll through.
Okay.
I'm not here to do the gun thing. I'm going to find another town.
Okay.
Nobody's taking my guns, all right? Nobody.
So nobody, okay, all right, well, that's fair.
You'd let them take your guns at the door?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if everybody else has guns, I guess I'd do it. I mean,
lily-livered.
I'd probably be shot, but to be fair, you know, I'd rather give them the gun than feel the brunt force of the handle of Wyatt Earp.
What was the average age of a young gentleman back in those days?
What's the average age of somebody what in like 1870?
In the
1870
know.
Average age.
I'm gonna guess 33.
So like the lifespan?
Yeah. Of a man.
Of a man 1870 to 1871 to 1880. The life expectancy was, so what is this?
What did I say, 33?
Said like 33, yeah. At birth, if you were born in 1849, no, that's not right. Sorry, at birth, this chart doesn't, I have to read all of this. What does this say?
Because, I mean, the sickness.
Yeah, if you, the 1871-1880 decade shows a life expectancy of about 40 years at birth. So if you were born in 1870, you were likely to live to about 40.
Wow.
That's not to say that you couldn't live to 60 or 70. For example, Wyatt Earp's dad,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he was born in like 1820, and he lived till he was 92.
Wow.
So
that's a good run today.
That's a great run today. Like people live that long. It's just they were even more uncomfortable then living that old than they are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless they're on some kind of drug, I would imagine. I don't know.
Joe Rogan said something funny about how like you think all that stuff is so far away. Like that was like years and years and years ago. It's really... I mean, even like 1776, he described it as, that's like three people ago, like three generations.
1776, it's a lot more than that.
Is it?
Yeah. 1776? Three generations?
Yeah. 100 years.
Well, two generations is your great-grandparents.
Yeah, the 1700s, 1800s.
No. Two generations is your grandparents.
Right.
So when was your the last grandparent that you know born?
No idea.
Mine was 1920. My grandfather was born in 1920, 1919, something like that.
Right.
So my mom and her dad, that's two generations. Then his father would have been born, say, 30 years prior to that. So 1890.
Yeah.
So his father, we're just averaging that you have a kid at 30, and even though you likely had a kid at 20.
Yeah.
So his father would have been born 30 years before that, 1890. Now we're on the fourth generation. So 1890, 1860.
So it's like four or five people ago.
So that's four, five. 1776 it's a lot more than that, man. It's like eight, nine people. Yeah, that's a lot of people, dude.
I mean, it's not really a lot.
Yes, it is, really?
You don't eight think? People?
I mean, eight people that have lived their whole lives?
Eight people's lifespans. I mean, in the grand scheme, no. That's a blink.
Yeah, but you could say that about anything now. Humanity's a blink.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay, thanks, Joe Rogan. Genius. kidding.
I mean, it is living that long. Like, your fears in life are what? Getting poisoned.
Right.
By food.
Right.
Getting sick.
Right.
Getting killed.
Right.
And that's it.
This thing
Those
says
are the big fears, right?
This thing that I was that I this chart that it gives me, it said that if you live to the age of 40, you are very likely going to live another 30 years at least.
If you get to 40.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you break your leg back then, it's
a broken leg.
But I mean, you have a chance.
The difference is like you think about it, you think of some of the ailments that you may have. Like, I had hernia surgery when I was 16 or 17.
You're probably dead back then.
I mean, what does that mean for me now if I leave a hernia unchecked? At my age now, if I went 20 years without checking that hernia, what happens?
They'd be like, that boy, you can't move, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it is.
You'd be crippled. You'd be bedridden.
Right. 20 years. What would happen?
They wouldn't. They'd put you to pasture, man.
My mom. Yeah, they would have had to put me down.
Yeah.
They would put me down like they would a dog.
They'd put you in a field somewhere. Absolutely. And be like, sorry, Cody.
Good night. Cody's hernia is not something I'm willing to take across the prairie.
No.
Right.
Yeah, like you're a mouth to feed. You're not helping anything.
Absolutely.
Damn. Hard knock life back.
How are you
going
to do that? And just imagine even if you go 100 years before that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Columbus sailed the seas in 1492. So if you think about it, the New World was discovered in 1492.
Could you imagine?
That was 500 years ago.
Could you imagine that? A bite of food you need to worry about, is this going to kill me?
Right.
It's something we take for granted today. A bite.
Right.
One bad piece of meat with a ton of salt all over it.
Nowadays,
to keep it
it's just like law. Like, we'll just sue you.
Yeah.
Before, it's like, oh, you're dead. You don't have time to sue me.
Yeah, now it's... this food better not get me fucking sick.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if this food gets me sick, I'm going to get a fucking C outside of their door. But back then, it was anything.
Done. You're a dead man.
Hey, try this. Dead.
Dead.
Fucking dead.
Yeah.
That's how they carried the meat. They just dumped salt all over it.
Yeah, everything's heavily preserved. I had a friend whose
family... No refrigerators.
I had a friend whose family's from El Salvador. And they take fish, and they'd preserve it themselves with salt. He'd just pour it all over it. He'd let it sit.
Ugh.
And then he'd let it sit, and then he'd eat it later. Like, it would sit out.
Like, he'd cook it.
I don't even know if he smoked it. I don't think it was necessary.
He just ate it straight.
Do you know anything about this, Mayron?
What's that?
Preserving foods?
A little bit. I mean, you know, seasoning it so that it's okay.
Like you can let it sit out for a very long time if you salt it.
Dude. Salt's the big deal.
Salt's the big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd go to India to get that shit. They'd get the good salt.
Well, they get the good salt.
Yeah.
Spices were from India.
Yeah, spices were like a big trade item. There used to be wars over that stuff.
Yeah, because you could preserve food and all kinds of shit, right?
Here's Romanian
Mayron's talking about Romanian pork fat things. It's just fat.
All they do is they cover it with salt.
They cover it with salt.
They just let it sit for like
and then they let it sit for 6 months.
Fuck.
And then you can eat it. They don't cook it. They don't do nothing.
And then they eat it as a family would eat it.
They put it on bread.
They put it on bread. They put it on bananas.
Yeah.
Any kind of thing they put the fat on.
Pig fat has, like, you get trichinosis from that.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. They don't cook it in just salt.
I've heard of slow age like beef,
right?
For like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, and you just put salt all over it, and it actually like it molds and like gets like all kinds of like shit all over it, fungus and all kinds of stuff, and you just cut that off the top.
Sorry,
and
aging beef is what you're talking
about. Yeah, that's what he's talking about.
And it's apparently like money, like it tastes so good after.
Oh, no, that's the
you want an aged beef.
Yeah.
Aged. Aged beef.
But really all that means is like they just lay it out.
Okay.
And it just like
properly
rots.
Properly refrigerated aged beef is the way to go.
But it's
because
like
when you kill a cow, it goes through rigor.
It goes through rigor, which means that its muscles.
It tightens up.
Stiffen and harden and seize. And you want to open those up.
Ugh.
Mm-mm-mm. Baby, baby.
Could you just cut off, like, decompose, just, like disgusting. Like, look
that's
up.
Actually what you do. You cut the outside layer away.
Yeah.
So Mayron's saying that you like, cut the outside layer away.
Look up a piece of aged beef. I'm sure it just looks rancid.
Right. I mean it's just old beef, right? What is dry aging? The truth? I mean, I don't really, like... Beef
yeah,
aging.
Dry age. Yeah, look, it's that all that shit on top, that is just rot.
Mmm. Man, that sounds
you
good.
You see that black? It's like turning black.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah, that's rotten meat.
It's good stuff.
That's how you know it's good, baby.
Just take a bite of that. Mmm.
Mmm, that's right. As long as it's using a moisture permeable material.
Like this.
Surface mold growth is not present. Flavor and scent exchange within the refrigerated environment is not a concern. I'm just reading some stuff on
it's like everything
Wikipedia.
Everything you heard about like, oh yeah, you gotta keep this beef fresh. No, you don't.
Leave it out,
no, you just leave it
no,
out.
No, it's gotta be refrigerated. You gotta keep it cool. Yeah, you don't want like the bad bacteria getting in it.
In Vegas,
they've got a big refrigerator, a big vault that you can have aged beef from.
Ugh.
Get it.
I'm always weary of eating seafood in Vegas because, like, they're a day away from, like, sea, from an ocean. You know?
Yeah, I know. But that's why they have planes and, like, seafood across the country is flown into places all over.
Still.
Or it's desert. Frozen and shipped. But, like, how is that weird?
Just weirds me out, man.
So you don't eat seafood in the middle of the country?
No, I do.
And you're not weirded out by that, but you're weirded out by Vegas?
I get weirded out, yeah.
You're weirded?
Because we're not as close to water.
So the further away you are from water, the bigger concern you have.
Yeah. Okay. It's just a little sort of red flag in my head.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, happy Columbus Day. I know we went on that big Columbus topic and we went through, you know, living in the 1880s to
watch your beef,
enjoying a nice, delightful aged beef. If you can hear that, that is Moxie. She's just wanting to get involved.
You know Banksy, right?
Oh, yes.
You know about this?
Oh, yes.
You wanted to talk about this?
We sure can.
We have to, right?
I mean, it's your world. In a lot of ways, it's your world.
I mean, it's all...
It's the art world.
We are the world.
Yeah, we are. We are the world.
So,
correct.
For those of you that don't know, there is a, I guess, like, aggro, like, street made, like, art cool again guy named Banksy.
Yes.
Like, no one's seen this guy. It's sort of like, it's on the cusp of this, like, exclusive... art, like questions of like, is this art? He's it's a risky, like new age, not even new. Like people have been like slapping paint on a toilet and calling it art.
Right.
For years and years and years. Or like, you know, you draw like a door on like a canvas that's like 20 feet long and it's just one door.
Right.
And like the name Banksy now is worth money.
Right.
You know, and this guy.
So just to kind of, you know, sum up what Dan is saying. So Banksy is essentially an English, or he claimed to be an English artist, or she. It's an unknown person or group of people. We don't
never
know.
Never been seen, right?
Never been seen. You don't know who it is. They're unidentified, but they go around and they do street art. So they spray paint signs and buildings, and they do all kinds of provocative imagery that is political, that is, you know, message worthy for the world. So satirical. But Banksy's like argument is like art is a scam, art is a joke. Banksy doesn't want you to be able to buy his art. It's not the idea of what it is.
But Banksy does have like prints and like paintings.
Yeah, there's actually been scenarios where Banksy has been out on the street actually selling his art as a street art on the side of the street, and it's actual Banksy art.
Oh, really?
Like,
and no one knows.
And nobody knows that it's Banksy at the time, but now those are pieces that people are
like freaking out over.
Yeah, yeah, of course, and buying. But there's a great documentary that was made about Banksy. It's called Exit Through the Gift Shop, and it's basically, you know,
right,
these stories of these street artists, and Banksy's highly covered in it, and, you know.
So he's made his claim to fame. It's now like world renowned. Like if you have a Banksy, you have arrived.
Yeah, like people will literally cut out cinder block walls, put glass on it, and then they'll display them in their giant, beautiful homes.
Oh, after Banksy does,
after
like
he's
a
done
thing.
It, like he'll go. That you know, people will cut it out, and then they've come to a point where they're trying to preserve them on the streets, where there are certain places where they have placed plexi over the Banksy to protect it out on the streets.
Really?
Yeah, to like mount and protect it.
Well, without getting into it, we all know how I feel about that yeah. sort of art.
We had a yeah. conversation about Banksy's like a year ago, maybe
like,
it was 2 years.
Is this art? And yeah. I'm like, no.
Yeah, and well, and that, and we also had the conversation about his like Disneyland that he put up in London. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, like he built like this like Disneyland, but it's like a joke on Disneyland. How would you describe it, Mehran?
Like a parody?
Yeah, it's a parody on Disneyland essentially, but it's meant to kind of play on the idea of commercialism and how Disney just masterminds it and takes advantage of it, and people suck it up and eat it up and all that jazz.
Okay.
But anyway, so what happened?
The news here, there was a painting that was being auctioned off in a Sotheby's auction. And now Sotheby's is like a very world-renowned auction house based in London. And the painting basically was up for auction. The auction occurred. It was happening. People were bidding on it. And the painting reached $1.4 million. I think that's after the buyer's premium and all that sort of stuff is added up. That's how the auctions work. But it got up to $1.4 million. Hammer drops, sold. And then the painting immediately starts to retract into the frame and come out like a paper shredder.
Yeah.
The entire thing starts to get cut. And this thing is just some kid like catching a balloon.
Yeah, so one of the most famous Banksy images is a little girl holding a red balloon,
a heart balloon. Yeah.
And so that's what this was.
And the auction house, they don't, if you watch the video, they don't skip a beat. They're just like, they like this painting starts going down after the hammer drops, and it's like,
right,
and like people are like, oh my god, what's going on? And then two gentlemen just walk up, pick the thing up and walk it out, and then they're like, next lot. Not sure what happened there, but let's move on.
I mean, it was a whole like planned, organized thing.
You think so?
Yeah, of course. Well, how do you not build a frame without not knowing that there is something that needs power to shred something?
Well, here's what they say. Here's the thing. They're saying that Banksy doesn't want his art sold, and like he made this. It was the painting in the frame, and apparently he pre-put a paper shredder type thing into the painting so that if it was ever sold, he could hit the button and send this thing down through the
shredder. Know.
I mean, I think this guy is capable of having a few people like on the payroll, or someone could like just, it's probably a public auction. No,
yeah, the Banksy's definitely big enough to where there are multiple people involved in these kinds of things.
Yes, yeah,
so and I would say that
you
like
could trigger a remote.
I don't buy it. You there's no way.
There's fucking terrorist cells that can trigger a fucking bomb with a cell phone. You think that Banksy can't like trigger a painting to get shredded?
I think there's a problem for me to not, like, if I'm an auction house, you're telling me that I don't see the bottom of this thing. You're telling me that I don't inspect the item that I'm selling it for millions.
I don't.
You're telling BS, dude.
I don't.
BS.
Think
you're in an auction house, and if I hand you a Han Solo jacket, mm-hmm. you're going to get the provenance of the jacket. You're going to find out where it is. And not only that, you're going to inspect it when you get it. And then you're going to tell me that you don't know that this frame, or you don't know that, say that you have that, you have this jacket that's displayed in this fancy case. Mm-hmm. You're telling me you don't know that this case doesn't have a set of knives that are going to come out and stab it. You're going to know this. You're going to know that this picture has a shredder at the bottom of it. There's no way you don't know that.
I think that you are confusing. It's two different things. Like we sell film props and costumes. So yes, we need to handle the item. We need to look inside the jacket. We need to like feel the texture. We need to like write a full description on this. But I feel like with this, You see it. It's a painting. It's on canvas, and it's in a frame.
No, man. You have to
prove. This is in the lot. It's up for auction.
But if I handed you Luke Skywalker's lightsaber, and I said, it's in the case, don't take it out. Bullshit.
Yeah, we would take it out of the case.
Of course you're going to. And with art, they're going to do the same thing.
But
they have to fully inspect it.
But that's because there's like,
art fraud is a real thing.
There's more value.
Art fraud is a real thing.
Yeah.
Especially paintings, and a man where Banksy is very stencil based, very replicatable. Am I right, Mehran?
Very replicable.
So,
what do you think? I think I'm with
Mehran's
you, Dan.
Mehran's here. He just happened to hang out.
I think with you, Dan, because the thing is, when you guys are selling props, what you're trying to do is determine whether it's actually the prop that you're selling, like whether it's Luke's lightsaber or Darth Vader's helmet or whatever. But when it comes to this piece of artwork, like if I'm Banksy and I got my people, they show up with it, like they're telling me it is what it is. Quite frankly, it doesn't even really matter if it is what it is. They're saying it is what it is. So let's say that it did have a weird thing on the bottom of it. That's what he's selling. So it doesn't matter what he gives you. It's like, this is what it is. There's a shredder in the bottom. Hey, there's a shredder.
My point is
I want a shredder in the bottom. How are you going to question that?
Nah, man. I like.
You don't think so?
These are individual like art pieces in themselves. They're not art pieces in a frame. It doesn't matter. If you still have to prove that. I don't give a damn if I'm like Banksy and I still hand it to the auction house and I say, sell this.
Right. But let's say I say I want there to be a shredder in the bottom. I'm the artist. That's the way I want it. It's part of the artwork.
You're going to tell people there's a shredder in your description.
Yes,
you will. You will know. Dan, am I right?
What?
If you had something that was like that and I was the artist or I was somebody in your auction house that said, here's this, I want to make sure that you have everything involved, you're going to describe what the item is and you're also going to say, and this frame also has a shredder at the bottom of it. You will let the buyer know. Full disclosure.
Yeah. Well, we're good at what we do. Like, I don't know.
Wait, the buyer or the auctioneer?
The us as an auction house, yes. We would inspect it completely.
Right.
And look at it.
Yes.
But like
and
normally,
then you'll write a description up to sell it.
But you're talking about different, it's apples and oranges, you know? Like the prop needs to be handled. The costume needs to be handled and inspected.
The art needs to be handled and inspected.
Not with this. Like it's a Banksy. It's not just the piece, the canvas. It is the frame itself. That is the art.
There's no way.
If he brought a telephone booth in there, like they're not going to check the telephone.
There's
booth
no way an auction house. There's no way that an auction house like Sotheby's does something that could potentially ruin their reputation as an auction house, because that's the only, that's what gives them their value.
So your contention is that they knew about this.
My contention is they knew about this. Now, I will also make the argument that that piece is now three times more valuable.
Yes.
Sotheby's did not divulge the identity of the seller. According to the catalog, Girl with Balloon had been acquired directly from the artist by the present owner in 2006. So, but suspicious minds wondered whether Sotheby's was completely taken by surprise. So the frame would presumably have been rather heavy and thick for its size, something an auction house specialist or art handler might have noticed. Detailed condition reports are routinely requested by the would-be buyers of high-value artworks. So usually this relatively small Banksy had been hung on a wall rather than placed by porters on a podium for the moment of sale, and the artwork was also the last lot in the auction.
This is such a setup.
I said it, the quote is, if it had been offered earlier in the sale, it would have caused disruption and sellers would have complained about that.
And sellers wouldn't have bought.
And Sotheby's let a man with a bag into the building. They must have known. That's what someone has said.
Easily they knew. They knew.
You got me.
Yeah.
The prank was one of several recorded in his best-selling book, Wall and Peace. The following year, he left an inflatable doll dressed as a Guantanamo Bay prisoner in Disneyland. Yeah, it's interesting. We never comment on identity issues, said Miss Brooks, Banksy's public relations manager. I don't know, man.
So Sotheby's was in on it. There's no way they weren't.
So what? Then what's the angle they want us to the angle, they want us to talk about
absolutely.
Their auction?
It's an art thing, man. It's a no. It's not a Sotheby's art thing. This is an art stunt performed by Banksy.
So this is the entire thing is part of the art.
Yes, exactly. And it's also that idea like I can shit in a bag right now. Somebody's going to spend $1.5 million for it.
Because I would
that's what this is.
Well, I would argue that the painting shredded is worth even more.
It is. It is more. I could
like,
I,
and it just hanging there shredded out of the frame as it is.
You could make the argument this is the same thing that Kanye West is doing all the time.
Absolutely. Mehran just said you could make the argument this is the same thing that Kanye West is doing all the time. He's absolutely right.
Well, I don't.
Is that he's just saying it doesn't matter what I do, you guys are going to buy it anyway.
It doesn't matter what I do, you're going to buy it anyway. Yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right, Mehran.
I don't doubt that Banksy planned to do this. That's why he. But I doubt.
You don't think Sotheby's was in on this?
I don't doubt the intention.
But are you arguing that Sotheby's was in on this, or you're not?
Have you seen this video? I don't doubt Banksy's intention to shred it if it was sold like that. So I think he purposefully made the shredder in the painting, and when it was sold in an auction, he would shred it. I don't think that he called Sotheby's and was like, look, this is a shredder painting, you know?
I think Sotheby's knew all about it.
Because someone else owned it.
I think Sotheby's knew all about it. Yeah, it was sold to him, but it was a friend of Banksy. They even stated that. It's somebody that knew him personally, or her, or whoever Banksy is.
Mm-hmm.
There's no gender attached to Banksy. So they knew, and they worked with Banksy to probably set this up. Like, it's a Banksy stunt. Banksy's all about them stunts, man.
The painting, it's worth more now.
Absolutely. Of course it's worth more now.
And you the person who owns it should hang it on the wall and it shred, like, in the shred form. They shouldn't slide it back up into that thing.
No, I think, yeah, you can either display it that way, or you actually, oh, that's funny. Mehran just sent me a picture of the We the People. In a frame. I think I saw that earlier today, and it's going through shredder after Senate confirmation. But no, man. I mean, like, Sotheby's knew about it. There's no way they didn't know about it. And you're right. This guy can definitely, or girl, can definitely hang this painting or this item up in their house with it shredded, and they could actually resell it, and it would make twice the amount of money that they just bought it for. Because it's so well known now.
Here's the quote from Sotheby's. We've been Banksy'd, Alex Brassic.
Yep.
Sotheby's head of contemporary art in Europe said at a news conference afterwards. I'll be quite honest. We have not experienced this situation in the past where a painting is spontaneously shredded upon achieving a record for the artist. And they he also said that this is not, they're not in on the ruse.
That not being in on the ruse doesn't mean they didn't know about it. So.
Well, then.
Yeah, man.
Look, the hammer dropped when the painting was up.
Right.
Then it shreds.
Right.
Now that buyer can renege.
Right.
On that painting. You think that they would risk? I guess I'm making an argument for it being a ruse.
Right.
But like, you think they would risk that the winning bidder having an out of the 1.4?
Yeah. And I'll say that yes, they can, because you know what they can do? They can arrange to sell it in another auction and they'll make double what they originally did. Because
I'd be like, look, I bought this painting not right. shredded, the hammer dropped. That is the condition of the painting. That's how it's represented on the catalog.
But if any of these collectors know Banksy, and they know that now it's worth that much more.
Yeah,
because you got a Banksy awesome. Painting in a Banksy statement. Like, it is double the Banksy. Banksy did it.
Right.
So, anyway. It's that.
So, go Banksy.
Go Banksy. I mean, it was a clever idea.
I think that sort of stuff is cool. But I don't appreciate the like,
it mocks the art world.
I don't appreciate like the toilet in the middle of the street, or like the
I don't appreciate toilets in the middle of the street either, Dan.
Or like a massive canvas with like a teacup on it, like a right. small little. I don't appreciate that sort of stuff.
Okay,
but this was cool.
Cool. Well, watch out for what you bid on, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
Hello there, Dank Odies. I am Joe Merle.
And Phil.
And together we are Those Movie Guys Podcast, here with your weekly movie recommendations. And in the spirit of Halloween, Phil, I'm going with 1999's The Blair Witch Project. I watched it last night. I heard somebody else talk about it on another podcast, and they were like, meh, 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 it's not very scary. But I was like, you know what? Rewatching it, I'm like, everything about that made me uncomfortable. The whole movie is still just as effective as it was almost 20 years ago.
And we've brought it up often on our own podcast that a lot of times not seeing the scary is scary.
Is very scary.
Like, never, you don't have to put a face to the monster, and you never do in The Blair Witch.
No, and it's a beautiful thing, man. It's just effective from start to finish, executed.
I don't need to see your ghouly, crazy face. Just your presence is enough.
Yeah, so revisit that if you haven't seen it in a while. So that's my choice for this week, is The Blair Witch Project. And Phil, what do you got on deck?
Mine is in the Halloween theme as well. That's 1996's Biodome.
Very Halloween themed.
It's on Prime, and it's always been a favorite. I don't know why. That Pauly Shore, Stephen Baldwin. This shit's just funny.
It was the height of Pauly Shore, and it was when Stephen Baldwin was funny, folks. It really is a great movie. It's a great comedy, 90s comedy. It's just
it's 90s it's comedy. There. Yeah. There was a shift. You know, Will Ferrell started to come out, Adam Sandler, and they started moving things around. But it's definitely Pauly Shore at his prime, Son-in-Law, and shit like that.
So we've got two Halloween movies for you this week. We've got The Blair Witch Project.
It would be scary to get trapped in a dome.
Yes, it would be very scary to be trapped under a dome. So those are your picks this week. Go ahead and check those out and let us know what you think about those two flicks. So for Those Movie Guys Podcast, I am Joe Merle.
I am Phil.
And we'll be back next week with more movie recommendations.
Dan, do you know who the filmmaker is that his name's Ken Burns?
Ken Burns.
Do you know who Ken Burns is?
Sure do. Owe him $20.
Ken Burns. So Ken Burns.
Went to my high school.
Ken Burns is this, he's this like film documentarian who's done all kinds of like really incredible like television series documentaries. And you've probably seen them. He's most well known for World War II, the Ken Burns World War II, and then he did a Ken Burns Civil War. And he's done a lot of these like big American war moments. He's also done some other things, but
Are those like
the
like,
picture ones? Like, 40, he does a lot of pictures.
Like the 40 movie like box set called like Civil War?
Right, like the Ken Burns Civil War stuff. And you originally would see them on like PBS.
Right. And he'd be like, get these 20 movies and this commemorative plate.
Right.
With a coin.
Exactly. So Ken Burns would do these things, and then they sell these VHS kits or whatever it is. I never knew what Ken Burns looked like.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks to the advent of Facebook, I'm able to see what Ken Burns looks like. And hey, Mayron.
Yes, sir.
Have you seen Ken Burns?
I know what Ken Burns looks like.
Do you?
The shaggy hair.
So Ken Burns has this hair, and that's what I want to talk about.
Oh, is that what you want to talk about?
Ken Burns's hair. Dan, look him up.
I'm Googling him.
So Ken Burns, he's a well-known documentarian.
At some point...
He made the Civil War.
Made the Civil War. He made World War II. Made Vietnam.
New York.
The Dust Bowl. That's right.
At some points, he looks like a Paul McCartney haircut.
So, yeah, it's really weird because I think his hair is fake. I think he is wearing a wig. I think this man is as bald as they get, and I believe he is wearing a wig. And my point I'm trying to make by talking about Ken Burns's hair is I'm making the argument that be proud of your baldness.
I agree.
And Ken Burns is not proud of how bald he is.
Listen, you gotta...
There's a difference between the color of his hair...
Yeah, his hair color.
Look at the eyebrows.
Okay, I'll look at the eyebrows. Look at the hair.
The hair color doesn't match the beard.
The man is wearing a hat hair. He's wearing a new era wig. That's what he's wearing.
Can we find an older picture?
Yeah, we can find it. Like, you mean when he's a younger man?
Well, younger man.
Look, that's a younger man version.
Oh, there's a longer.
Oh, no.
Oh, that looks wig-like.
That looks like he cut it right. So, Ken, come on. So there's his flowing hair. Come on, man. I'm sorry, Ken Burns, today.
We should do a 10-part PBS series.
A 10-part PBS on Ken Burns' wig. So Ken Burns, this wig is just criminal. It looks like, what's the Star Trek creature? The tribble. It looks like a tribble is on his head and it's kind of moving around.
Yeah, you know, he's got a carpet on
You know, Ken Burns, I appreciate the work you did. You did the war. That was nice. You did a lot of great stuff, but buddy, be proud that you're bald, man. Accept it. Enjoy it. Embrace it.
Look, man, I used to be a guy with a full head of hair.
Dan
curls.
Did. Absolutely.
Curls for days. The ladies loved them.
So I want to say something straight here, Ken Burns, before Dan goes in his diatribe. Dan's got some passionate feelings about this topic.
I do. If you're losing your hair, If it's starting to like affect you, just, you know, like a Band-Aid, man, cut it off. Cut it all off.
Cut it off. Be proud of your baldness.
Embrace it. I'm sure I could grow like a freaking reverse yarmulke right now, like chrome dome type deal, but it would just look pathetic.
Where would your hairline start, Dan?
Where would mine?
Yeah.
Oh, like... Like, I get it. I get here.
You get
here.
Up to there, right up to the top.
Probably here. But, I mean, this still probably all comes in thick.
Okay.
But I got the
crown.
You're crowning.
The chrome dome.
I got the crown. The crown's hit me.
Huh?
Do you remember the last haircut?
Mayron's asking about his last haircut.
Funny, last haircut. I know one of my last haircuts was right across from Busta Rhymes in Miami. For real, it was New Year's Eve in Miami,
right?
And I wanted to get a nice fade,
right?
A good shape up, as they call it.
Okay,
so I went to the nearest black barbershop to get like a proper like fade, you know?
Right?
You need to go to a black barbershop if you want a good fade.
Okay,
so I go, I'm in there, and then like three Suburbans pull up.
Right.
Like all black Suburbans. They like roll in and this like camp of people come into this barbershop and Busta Rhymes.
Woo-ha, woo-ha, I got you all in check. Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
He comes in. He sits in the chair like across from me. And it's bus a bus. He's just getting his fade.
Did you say anything to him?
Nah.
Nah.
You just didn't want to bug him getting a haircut. Because there's like a lot of rules in black barbershops.
Oh, there is?
Yeah. A lot of unwritten rules and stuff.
I mean, every time I've seen like the barbershop movies, all of those guys are talking to each other.
Well, that's Cedric the Entertainer and Ice Cube.
So you're telling me if you're in a barbershop with Ice Cube and Cedric the Entertainer, you're going to have a conversation with them, but if Busta Rhymes walks in, you're just going to be like, I'm cool?
I don't know all of the rules, so I was weary of breaking rules I didn't know.
What were the rules you did know?
Hmm?
What were the rules that you did know?
The rules I did know were the weight is TBD, to be determined. Like, you come in and you sit. That's it. There's no sign in.
They'll call upon you when they feel ready for you.
Yeah. The first time I went to a black barbershop, it was in DC.
Right.
And I made my sister's boyfriend at the time go with me.
Okay.
Because I didn't know.
How old were you?
20s.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably mid to early 20s.
Okay.
And like, so you go in there, you sit. And you just like, you wait.
Do you read magazines? You just kind of listen in as, into the barbershop talk? Shop talk?
Because you don't know if somebody goes there every day. Because with a fade, with that sort of close fade that predominantly African-Americans get.
You need consistent maintenance.
Yeah, it's like a beard at that point. Like your head is your beard. You have to maintain it.
Right.
So like your fade could be out in like...
2 days.
If you're maintaining your shit, you got your shit on lock, you're going to the barber like every 2 to 3 days.
So you walk in, never seen you before in your life, you sit down, just waiting. How long did you wait?
Probably 45 minutes.
45 minutes?
Yeah. And people have precedence too. Like say you go to that barbershop every 3 days.
Absolutely.
You're walking in. You're getting in front of me.
if there's
a chair,
this is an interesting business model.
Yeah, like you're getting in front of me.
Customer's
sure.
Not always right.
No, and like you might have your guy,
right?
So like you don't know who's waiting for their guy, because like that's another thing. I'm sure people like other people that aren't black go to like the same barber. You know,
right.
Like
right.
I have a barber. I have my person who cuts my hair.
Right, right.
But there's other people who are like, fuck it. I tell them just trim it, you know.
Right.
I can go to anybody.
Right.
But I think a lot of people at black barbershops have their guy.
Right.
So it's sort of, if you don't have an appointment, I don't know if they do appointments.
Well, when I was a kid, I went to this place and my dad would always take me to this old school barbershop. His name was Frank. That was all I knew. Dad's like, "You ready to go to Frank's?" And I said, "Sure, sounds good." And every time we'd go to Frank's, I'd always be like, "I'd like a bowl cut, Frank." And Frank would always be like, "You damn kids and your bowl cuts." And he hated, because he was terrible at getting a bowl cut.
Wow.
He was terrible. You'd think it would be easy.
Frank couldn't do it.
Frank couldn't give me the bowl cut like I wanted.
Would they put the bowl on the head?
No, you just follow the line.
And he had you all wobbly?
He had me all wobbly. Frank just couldn't line it up. So, well,
so like, I'm half black, half white. My hair is a mess.
Right.
It was a mess.
Right.
Growing up, my mother used to cut it for like several years.
Right.
And that would just be like fingers trimmed, you know, all the way around. So it's just like,
when you were growing your hair, was there a point where you were like, "Oh, this is my style. This finally I found the haircut that works for me."
Not really.
Not at any point. But baldness has worked for you.
Well, see, I didn't really care about how I looked like as a kid until like middle school.
But I'm saying, like, once you got to that point, did you find this moment of like, oh?
Yeah, it was sort of like shave the sides.
Oh, yeah.
Like shave the sides and like sort of fade it up. And then leave the top sort
like
of,
when you say shave the sides, like we're talking down to the skin.
Well,
or would you leave remnants of hair?
There'd be remnants of hair.
Okay,
but it was like shave, like a fade up, like uh-huh. Like maybe a two guard.
Yeah,
am I out of your? Out
no,
of your
I
way
get.
There?
I know what a two is. Yeah.
Okay, so like two at the bottom up to like a five on
right.
top or whatever, and then I would just spray bottle and It was just this wavy mop, like shaggy,
right,
sort of hair. And when you would comb it, when you would brush it, you could really like, you could like see
the waves,
the ripples through it. Yeah, it's very hard to manage.
You want to know what's so weird? Is I, as long as I've known Dan, I've always known him as bald.
Just bald. Yeah.
I've always known Dan as bald, and the only place he'd grow hair is on his face.
It's a shame. Well, that's why I do it, because that's my haircut.
You know what? You should grow your hair back.
No. You don't want to see it, man.
I do. I want to see this.
Jenny will be like, no, this is not happening.
What color is it?
It's the color of my hair. It's like brown. Brownish. Oh, it's brown. Red. Okay. It's got some red in there, some blondes.
Yeah, man. You should totally grow it out. Moxie's sake, grow a ponytail.
I wanted to grow one of those fucking like Ramses things from like Ten Commandments.
Right, right.
That
right.
Just like came out.
Right. Yul Brynner.
Just braid that thing up in the back and just have it.
He was so good.
Yeah, like down the side.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's what it was. Like my brother, he would do him and my sister, they did a Dark and Lovely hair straightener. Cause my brother was like a rocker. Well, is a rocker. So
still today.
He wanted like straight long like, hair, like
long straight hair, right? Yeah, right. Like he plays electric guitar, yeah. And just be like, and his hair would fly up, and
yeah.
Down.
But before he was doing that, like he was just right. Growing out this like mop, he looked like a freaking looked like Ben Franklin,
right?
You know, with like all the curlers. But it's like, David, you know, you're half black, right? Like, it's not gonna come out wow. Like straight, like rocker. So he and my sister's was like very clumpy.
Right.
Very tightly, tight curls.
Your sister's found something that works for her at this point, though.
Yeah. I think she still gets her hair relaxed.
Right.
But
right.
Me, I was like, it's gone, man. Fuck it.
Bald Dan.
Get it gone.
Bald Dan.
Yeah, man.
Well, Ken Burns.
But yeah, if your shit is fucking nasty and crusty and like you're balding, and just do us all a favor and cut that shit off.
Yeah, I guess. Do that.
Just do it.
Get rid of that crust, as Dan would.
Get rid of it. Everybody likes a slick bald head. And look,
absolutely.
If you're gonna discover like 30 moles under there or something, like then get them lanced.
Like, lance the moles.
Yeah, use that money for fucking that you would use for haircuts on getting your shit maintained.
Okay. Well, you heard it straight from Dan. Ken Burns, if you have questions, give him a call. He'll be able to help you out.
I'll walk you through the process, my friend. Cody.
Yeah, Dan, what's going on?
Are you up to speed on the way lobsters are cooked?
Like, what do you mean? Like, boiled and then you hear their screams?
Right.
Yes, I am.
Okay. That's it.
Next topic.
My cousin sent me this. There's a Maine restaurant that is sedating lobsters with marijuana.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. They gotta
be. This is ridiculous.
The U.S. restaurant is using marijuana to sedate the lobsters before killing them because they have feelings. Okay.
I can't take it, Dan.
Their process, they say their process is way more humane and it lessens their pain before death.
Yeah, because they're baked out of their mind.
They're
of course.
Stoned lobsters. Did you know they're crustaceans, right?
Yes.
Like a crustacean can get high?
I guess. I don't know how you would know if you can't talk to it.
And this is very, I mean, call me stupid, but I wasn't aware that like they had brains.
Well, they have to have brains.
But like,
how else do they move? How else do they like do the things that lobsters do? Close and open their claws.
Yeah, I guess.
Blink
I'm
their
stupid.
Eyes.
I mean, just like signals that say like eat.
I mean, they have to know to mate. Like these are nature's creatures.
Yeah, they're often cooked by being dropped into a pot of boiling water, and that is seen as cruel by some. And there's growing evidence that crustaceans feel pain. But I'm not sure
what's the evidence.
Yeah, what is
that? What is the evidence?
They do squeal.
There
is a squeal.
There's a noise that they make as you boil them alive.
Yeah.
And yes, it sounds cruel, but man, they taste good with butter.
Oh, they taste great with
butter.
They're
so good with butter.
A growing body of scientific findings suggests that not only lobsters, but other invertebrates, such as crawfish and crabs, are also able to feel pain. January, Switzerland decided that their lobsters must be stunned before boiling. They also said that eating these sedated lobsters that are stoned will not make customers high. And using marijuana leads to better quality meat as the animal is more relaxed when it dies.
That goes back to Mehron's point of rigor.
Right. So would that work with every animal? Like before the cow gets the freaking the fucking gun, you got to get them high? And then will they be okay?
No, because that thing that you described,
it's instant death.
It kills them instant because it shoots it. And if you do it properly, it's supposed to hit them. Where? Do you know where's the spot is, Mehron? What's it called?
Right here?
Yes, but there's a spot that they point like in the brain that just...
No, I don't know.
There's like a...
It
severs the cortex from the rest of the body, right?
It severs that thing.
How far does it go through? We're talking about the poke or the proker prod thing.
So in No Country for Old Men, the villain or the antagonist or whomever's supposed to be the devil or death, whatever you want to call him.
Do they call that a cow prod?
It's not. Is it a cattle prod?
Cattle prod is a zapper.
It's an electric zapper. So these are called
this
like...
This is a pneumatic...
This is like, a metal piece that just like shoots into the skull of an animal and just
it's
kills it.
It's called a captive bolt pistol.
Captive bolt pistol.
But essentially it's supposed to, it's basically what he was using where it shoots whatever the bullet or the, I don't know how you describe it. What is it, Mehron?
Slug.
Yeah. It takes the slug, it shoots it in, and then because of the force and the amount of air behind it, it's able to suck it back in. So there's some reaction in physics that allows it to shoot out at a high rate of speed and then it's able to suck itself back in because of the intense amount of like pressure and speed. I don't know the science behind it. It's like a what?
It's like a high-tech pop gun.
It's like a deadbolt.
Right.
A deadbolt traveling at like a billion miles an hour. Absolutely. But anyway, so when I worked at Harpoon Hannah's in Ocean City, they had like lobster night, and the guys there, they would before they would boil the lobsters, they would lay them on their back. They'd lay them on their back, and like there's like a piece in the center of the lobster, and they would like pierce it with a knife first, and just stab it, and then you'd see the tail like come up and be like, and then they would put them in the water.
Then they didn't hear the screams.
I get, yeah. So
you stab it first.
It's sort of just a... And then drop it in. And I'd be like, oh, shit. And I'd be like, let me see that again. And they'd be like, yeah, this is how you do it. And he was like, watch, the tail of like all their limbs are just like... And then done.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a method to killing the lobster before you boil it.
I went to bring your own lobster party.
Mehron went to a bring-your-own-lobster party. Come here, Mehron. Come over here.
Everybody had to bring their own lobster. And the guy that ran the party, he was like an expert. And he wouldn't allow us. We were throwing him on a barbecue, on a grill.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, no, nobody, you can't throw the live lobster. It's inhumane or whatever. And so what we do is he showed us how to kill them. And he was killing them for you if you want. And you take a knife, you put it, just regular. You just let it stand there. And then sort of like between the eyes... He would jab this thing and then cut right through it. And the weirdest thing was, for a couple of moments, it was still alive.
Yeah.
And like the weirdest thing is they got those two eyes that are like on, like they're almost like on little fingers, like their eyes at the top of their... I watched him kill so many lobsters, and every time the lobster's eyes would cross over each other. It was the weirdest thing.
Oh, shit.
But then you knew they were dead.
Why do you think that is?
It was probably some nerve thing, but it was the weirdest thing because it was looking at me.
Their eyes would just...
They would cross across each other because they're sort of, they're sort of sticking out there.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
You know?
That's weird. That's so weird. I don't know. I think... I don't know. There's... when we cook crabs in at Higgins,
right?
They would stun them, like electrocute them first. Ha. That was the stun.
Yeah, how did they stun them?
Like you have them in this like vat almost with like holes in it,
right? And then you'd run electricity through the water.
Yeah, you drop it through the water, and you like.
Oh. There's not like a guy with a toaster.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's some woman out for revenge on her husband, and she just dropping toasters in the crab bins.
Because I guess if there's even like a gap in from death to like
right.
boiling water, then you run the risk of it being bad.
I guess.
I don't know.
Right.
So that's why it's sort of yeah. So they would like stun them, electrocute, and then in the hot water.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't care.
I don't care
either. Is that bad?
I like the taste of lobsters. I'll continue to eat them. I'm sorry for all of those that fight for the lobster.
There are signs in Baltimore now that PETA is putting up and like old vegan restaurants are putting up that are like, the crabs have feelings. Don't eat the crabs. Blah, blah, blah.
Yippity skippity.
Like,
who cares?
Fuck off, man. Crabs right. taste great. They're crustaceans. It's okay.
It's the circle of life, man.
Yeah, we got
to
eat.
If the crabs
eat.
Were us, they'd eat us.
They would.
Why not? If we were dead on the beach, they'd eat us.
They would totally eat us.
So, what?
Yeah.
Lobster, I don't think they die of natural causes. Like they're practically like immortal, is what I understand.
Lobsters are practically immortal. Right. So it's somebody. Like they are the really? Highlander of the natural... The natural world.
That's what I say.
The lobster is the Highlander of the natural world.
So
thank you for...
Like that's why lobsters can grow to be like 6 feet long. It's just that that's, they usually get eaten by something.
You're right. Lobsters can grow to 6 feet long.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's funny.
They are the goldfish of the crustaceous world. Crustaceous.
Crustaceous?
at Comic-Con, we were at a crab joint with Marshall, and his crab looked like it had like black marks on it and shit. So we right. were like ragging on it for forever. Like your crab is so old. It died of natural causes.
Right, right, right.
Like,
also, there's blue lobsters. Have you seen this?
No.
Yeah, they're rare. They're like one in a million. And every so often, somebody gets a blue lobster.
Damn.
A blue lobster is apparently, Maron just talked about a blue lobster. They're very rare. They're like one in a million, and they, periodically people will get a blue lobster.
Why are they so expensive?
And they also sometimes you'll get a lobster that's half blue, like it's right down the middle.
Right, right, right.
Oh, wow. That looks
the
amazing.
Blue is so beautiful.
That's what I want to eat.
It's so beautiful. But like here, it looks like August 24th, CBS. CBS has an article, and they say the headline is "Colorful Catch." And this woman
wow.
has apparently she caught a blue lobster, in which she's gonna eat it. So
did she eat it? Yeah, you have to eat it.
I mean, I mean, it's so cool. I love the blue. Like the blue is so rich.
Well, you take a picture of it, but you eat it.
Yeah, you got to eat it. So,
is. Is lobster meat good or is chewy butter good? Because when I eat a lobster, I'm not really tasting the great. When I eat a blue crab, I'm tasting the meat, and the meat is delicious. When I'm tasting a lobster, it's chewy, but I'm really enjoying the butter.
Lobster meat is better than crab meat.
You think so?
It's a little sweet. Lobster meat's a little sweet. It's very subtle.
He's yeah, right. It
I
is.
Don't,
it's better.
I like crab meat better.
That's because you're from Maryland.
Crab, yeah, you are. You're a bit biased because you are from Maryland. So you're gonna say state crab. However, if you're from Maine, you're just like, oh yeah, I'm a big lobster guy. Durr.
But I understand the allure and the
allure like, of lobsters.
Yeah, like it's sort of hoity-toity and like ooh,
hoity-toity.
Fancy.
Hoity-toity? Why
fancy.
Is it fancy? It's
yeah,
not fancy.
Like,
it's a giant cockroach that lives in the sea.
But it's a meal that like you look on a menu and it says like market price. So like it's not something you can't go up
crab too.
No one's going up
market
to them and being
price?
Like.
They do that with crab, man.
How much is the lobster today? Like, that's something you just say, I will have the lobster, and you're like, I'm not worried about the price. right?
No.
Am I right?
I'm going to ask.
You will ask?
Yeah, because I'm curious. First of all, I'd ask, but I wouldn't order it.
I heard don't ask.
Oh, shut up. If you got to ask, you can't afford it.
Right. It's like that.
Come on.
That's what the lobster game.
No, man, I disagree.
You'd be like, what's the market price?
Yeah, I would. I'd be like, so what are you guys selling this for?
On a date?
Especially on a date.
No, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't ask on a
I'd be like, no ask.
No, you have to ask
no
on a date.
No ask.
I would actually do this on the date. I'd be like, hey, my date's interested in knowing what the market price of the lobster is.
Right, because she's treating.
But
right?
Then,
yeah, that's what
if I'm on a date, she's treating. You're damn right.
But yeah. If you ask, you have to buy it.
That's not true. That's insane.
The only time I feel like you can ask is if you also buy it.
Wait a minute. What did you say? If you ask, you have to buy it?
Right.
Danfield.
Just say, give me the lobster.
Otherwise, you're telling everyone, like, I will not spend this much.
This is insane.
Like, my meal is not as important as my money.
So then
money.
You are saying that you know, if you ask, you can't afford it. Like, that's what you're saying.
Right.
Right.
I'm saying.
No, man.
Here's what I'm saying. Nonsense. You're on a date, everyone. You're on a date with a lovely lady or...
Man,
or a lovely man or whatever.
Whatever it is.
You open your menu and there's all the fish options. And like it
red
says,
snapper, tuna, swordfish, and then there's lobster.
And it just says market price. You're telling me you are going to call the waiter over and have a conversation in front of whoever you're trying to impress and be like, how much is this? Because if it's too much, I'm not going to buy it.
First of all,
come on.
Your approach is amateur. Okay.
What would you say?
Absolutely. So my approach would be I wouldn't call over the waiter. This asshole's going to come and ask me what I want in the first place. So I wait for them because I'm not going to be a pushy guy.
You say, sir, I'm on a budget.
No,
so
I'm not. No.
How much is the lobster?
Why are you saying all the wrong things? You easily ask. So I see you have the lobster at a market price value now.
Just wanted to check the market.
What is that? The market, right? Like academically. Like, by the way, I know a lot about lobsters. I'm just curious what you charge for lobster. And if he says it's a good price, I might refuse it anyway and be like, I was just curious.
Absolutely. I'm on Marin's side. I would definitely say, I'm curious. What is the market price for lobster? It's $21.99 a pound. Well, as you could see, I was curious. Thank you so much.
No, that's terrible.
Haven't you ever asked about something on a menu that you didn't want to order?
No. Yeah. If I don't know it, I don't need it.
You don't need it? That's it?
Basically.
You don't have any natural curiosity?
If you can't pronounce it. If you got to ask the price, you don't buy it.
This is ridiculous.
Don't say it all fucked up.
No,
you're not
going to
be like, I'll have the owl's juice.
Wrong.
Okay. No, man, you guys are not going to bully me into submission on this one.
Okay, all right.
You're on a date. You're trying to impress.
Nobody's bullying you into submission. You're just being wrong.
Then your date's going to look at you and be like, what are you, like, test the market of lobster? Like, that's on your mind right now? Like, what the price is?
First of all, maybe your date appreciates if you are a little thrifty. And you're willing to look out for the prices of lobster.
No.
Okay. Second of all, maybe your date understands that, you know what? Not everything's free, you know?
Thrifty's date four. Thrifty is not like your number, an attribute you want to like, a card you want to lay on the table on date one.
Well, you know what? Maybe that's an important attribute as to who you are.
Like,
and you need to lay it out there on the table.
Thank you, waiter. I've brought a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with me to dinner. I'll just have that. Appreciate it.
That's a solid move.
The peanut butter and jelly at a seafood restaurant.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
nah. You don't ask the market if you don't know.
Okay.
You don't know.
Okay.
But if you want to eat a lobster, nothing should stop you from eating a lobster.
Agreed.
Even the price.
Let's say you're firmly aware that a lobster is going for $70. You walk in and that market price, they want $150 for that lobster. Don't you want to know?
If you know the price of lobster, and he's right, Mehran's right.
I just know it.
No, yes, you know it. You happen to be a lobster connoisseur,
right.
And they don't show you the price. So you ask, mm-hmm. And then they say that it's $200 a pound. Because you asked, now you're obligated? You're a man that knows the world of lobsters. You trade in lobster commodities. And now you're telling me that because they tell you that it's $200, you're required and obligated to buy from them? Nonsense.
This is your move, Dan.
My next question is, can you haggle a market price at a restaurant?
Some people would say everything's negotiable.
Really?
Absolutely.
Like you, right. You'd be like, even I don't
date,
think so.
Even a date.
Even a date.
That's right. If you go out on a date, here's what you do. You want to guarantee that you got yourself a late night appetite. You know what I'm saying? Look. You go in and you say, I'd like the lobster, and it's $200 a pound. Okay? Wait, hear me out. Hear me out. It's $200 a pound. Then at the end of the night, she sees the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Looks like our meal was $280. You just spent $280 on that meal. She doesn't know what the market price of the lobster was. Bing, bang, boom. She thinks she just spent half of that meal. And really, your lobster was where it all cost. But she's thinking, oh, he spent all that money. Looks like I better give daddy something to taste.
Oh, stop.
It is a real, this is a straight up tit for tat.
That is. That's a tit for tat move, my friend. Nailed it.
Look. whether you think it's okay or not on a date to ask the price of a lobster at market, if you do, then when she or he goes home and someone asks her how the date went, that is going to be part of her her recap.
He asked how much the lobster was?
Promise. 100%. You'd be like, well, there
you
was...
You think they're going to talk about that?
Yeah, they'd be like, there was this thing. He asked about the how much it cost, and they sort of went back and forth.
Well, lobster's expensive, Bethany. I don't understand why you're weirded out by it. I mean, my father was big in the lobster trade.
We're gonna have to ask Instagram and Twitter. About
absolutely.
This.
Reminds me of a new term that I heard today, which was food digger, which is a woman who goes on dates with people she meets online just for the dinners.
Or that Ooh. Guy, or that guy that food. That was being charged. He was going through court. Because he would go on dates with girls and then he'd leave them with the bill.
Whoa, I did not hear about that.
Wow.
He would go on like Tinder dates and stuff and then he'd...
He'd be like, peace.
He's like, I got to go to the bathroom. And then he'd leave.
Wow.
Son of a bitch.
Super smooth guy. I bet those were all lobster dinners.
Market price.
On Mehran's topic, I'm piggybacking off of that. If you're... Let's say you're paying first date. And
with you?
No, not okay. With me. A sweet lady. Maddie, while you were dating.
Okay, Madge and I are on a date.
First date. She just says, I'll have the lobster, and it says market price. Are you gonna step in there?
Immediate salad.
Wait, you're saying you're ordering a salad?
I'm going immediate. If she orders the lobster,
so then you counter with like minestrone?
No, yeah. Exactly. It sounds like it's a poker thing. Like she annies up with market price, and you're like, I'm having the cup of minestrone. Yeah. So, but I thought your question though was if she orders the lobster, and it just says market price without asking.
Right, and she tells the waiter, like, I'll have the lobster.
I'll just have the lobster. Like no check. Like you're saying, the thing to do is you're at the table already. You gotta. There's nothing you can do. You can't have a discussion about that.
No,
I would
can't.
Agree. At that point, you can't.
Yeah, she's ordered the lobster.
She's got free reign to order whatever she
exactly.
wants. And you should actually know going in there. If you're a wise enough man, you've looked at lobster
you've
price.
Looked at how many dollar signs there are at this restaurant at some point. You know,
right.
Like you can do $3, $4, whatever it is.
And is that affecting? Is that affecting date two that she just went and did that?
I mean, here's what happens though. Again, it comes down to like, okay, end of the bill. Here's my bill, $280. Uh-oh, he just ordered minestrone and I ordered the lobster. Looks like he's going to get a little taste.
I think Cody's right. I think if someone orders the lobster right out the gate, she's looking for something.
Agreed.
If she orders lobster out the gate, she's looking for something.
She's looking
really?
For something. Yeah, absolutely.
What if she just really wanted lobster?
I got to be honest with you. We have been on this topic for almost 20 minutes.
I'm interested.
I know you are, but like this is insane. I gotta call the cut on the lobster talk because
all
we're
right.
going nowhere.
Hey,
but hey, ladies out there, if you want to treat a man right, make sure you go out for a lobster dinner and you
stop.
Give him a taste.
No, they ladies, you do not owe anybody anything if you order any food
unless it's a lobster dinner.
Okay.
I'm saying I don't think they owe anything. I'm saying they've already decided if they order one way or another.
Right.
Yeah, is there a meal that if ordered is like I'm down for tonight?
No.
For the sexy time.
Yeah, is there a meal? Yeah, it's called pasta.
If you order the pasta.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, you're feeling real big. She's feeling real big. It doesn't matter. Anyway.
If me and Jenny had a meal and I ordered the pasta, that means I'm going to bed.
That's what I'm saying.
Like I'm going to sleep.
No, after you eat pasta, nobody wants to have sex.
No.
It's the anti-sex meal.
It is very much the anti-sex
And don't you
dinner.
Love how Italians are like the definition of like a love culture? Yeah, you're eating all of this bread.
Yeah,
and it's like, well, looks like I had 17 pieces of garlic bread tonight. Looks like we're gonna go home and do what we always do after that: sleep.
Oh, I will be comatose.
Oh my god, not happening.
So everyone, lobsters are now being given marijuana, and it's a little more humane. Excuse me.
That's right. I want to tell you about a company called JC Room Blocks. Do you have 10 or more out-of-town guests coming to an event near you? Maybe you have a bris, a wedding, a family reunion, a science convention. Maybe some friends are coming in town and they just want to get drunk in one place. Or your mom's coming into town and she's got 10 brothers and sisters and they need a room so they can all come over to your house and have a bagel. Well, I have the answer for you. JC Room Blocks. They research hotels in the area that you need the rooms. So if you're in San Diego, they're going to find those rooms. They're going to put them together for you. Oh, what? You need to be in Boston for a little bit? No big deal. Go over to Boston and hang out with your Boston friends. You got 10 or 15 of them and you need a room? Fucking Boston. That's what you're going to do. Since they're certified travel agents, they can get you the lowest possible rates. On top of discounted rates, they can also negotiate highly discounted bridal suites, shuttle service, and food and beverage functions. If you mention the Dan and Cody podcast, that's us, they'll waive their fee. That means you don't pay anything, okay? Check them out, jcroomblocks.com. I'm going to repeat that, jcroomblocks.com. They're on Facebook, they're on Twitter and Instagram. Follow them, check them out, get all them rooms! Last night, Madeline and I are driving home, and I text you.
Oh, yeah!
And I had felt a like twinge of true fear. Last night I felt true fear. And what had happened was Madeline and I were driving back. I had to do some work and Madeline was with me and we're driving back in this car and all of a sudden there's this orange light in the sky. And Madeline says to me, "What is that?" And I don't know what it is. I don't know. I've never seen something like this before. And as it's moving up, what happens is all of a sudden there's a giant explosion in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And I freak out in the car. I'm like, I don't know what this is. This is not a normal thing. You can see light emitting from one side, light emitting from another piece, from another side. I'm either thinking this is an alien spacecraft and today is the day. Today is the day alien spacecraft arrives.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think it's a chemical weapon explosion. And chemical weapons are going to rain down on us. So we're driving in the car, and I'm like, Madeline, this is not a normal thing. This is weird. I'm like, check the news. And she says to me, "What's the news going to tell you?"
She's fake news.
She's like, no. And she's like, so she calls her sister, and she says, "Stella, look outside, see what you see." She sees it. I'm freaking out because the colors, it looks like a nebula in the sky, this explosion in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're driving and I almost hit a car because I'm like driving this giant van. And it's just this moment of like, okay, what am I going to do? This is it. This is the moment. What do we do?
Get the dog.
That's what Madeline said. We got to go home. We got to get the dog. And we were 10 minutes away, 20 minutes away from loading up a car and heading north and not knowing where the hell we were
going to
go.
You're going to my place.
Or I'm going further than that.
You're going way more north.
I'm going Idaho, baby. We're getting out of Dodge, getting out. Buddy.
Yeah, man.
My Mayron's like rolling his eyes like, "Why would you do that? It's an alien civilization."
He's saying that this thing happened. Mayron says, "There's only two possible explanations."
That's aliens?
Only two possible explanations.
Aliens or chemical weapons?
Aliens or chemical weapons attack. Not maybe a satellite.
Not maybe a satellite. Not maybe. Nope. Nope. Nope.
He's got Bill Pullman on the line.
I got Bill Pullman on the line. Man, he's got some real nerve here.
I was...
So what were you doing? So just to give some people some context as to what it actually was, Tesla SpaceX company shot off a rocket, which was 120 miles north of here.
Lancaster.
Yeah. And they shot off this rocket, and it was taking a satellite up into space, and what we ended up seeing was... kind of it shooting off its second propulsion or whatever it was. It dropped a rocket and shot itself. It gave itself enough boost to go into space. And that's the explosion we saw was that. I mean, it was amazing.
Yeah.
It was something I've never seen in my life. It was incredible.
I was running. I was doing my 10-mile run at night. And, like, I was in my zone. And, like, I look up and... at the point where I caught it, it looked like two beams of light were beaming on each other. It looked like two spotlights, and they weren't moving. They were like hovering there.
So did you keep running?
Yeah, I kept running for a little bit, and I was like, this is really strange. It looked like a standoff in space.
It looked like two ships, like looking like they're going to fight each other.
Yeah, it looked like a standoff and spotlight.
That's right.
I was like, are they trying to find somebody? I was like, someone on the run.
Right.
And then it looked like another spotlight was coming from like the ground. And then I saw shit like around it, like helicopters, right. I guess. Like checking it out or like getting images of it. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And I was like, I went to Aliens 2. I was like, is this Aliens? And I was like, I feel like.
Is this Aliens? He's like, so casual about it.
I was like, I feel like, because I'm still running.
I'm thinking like, how are we going to survive this apocalypse? And then Dan's like running like, is this Aliens and shit? I don't know, man.
This is weird. Why would they come to, because it looked like it was right above me. So I'm like, why would they come to Santa Clarita?
Right.
You know? But then I saw, I guess what you were talking about, like something dropped off.
Right.
And it like broke away and like dropped. It was this big like orange ball and it like fell down. And I was like, this is really fucking weird. And then I got a call from Jenny and I was like, damn, I guess this is for real. So I'm picking up, I'm running. I'm like,
right.
Hey, babe, what's up? What's going on? And then Jenny, she's like, do you see this right now? And I was like, yeah, what the fuck is it, man? I was really calm about it. And she was like, apparently Elon Musk shot a rocket off into space. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. It's really cool.
Oh, man. I like that. What if Jenny didn't know what it was?
Now I'd have to run. I'd turn around and run home.
Right.
At that point.
It was, I felt true fear.
It was weird, but I never got to, it was weird how calm I was about it.
I was like, not calm. I was a crazy person, and you are calm about it. Like, oh, it's just some aliens. No big deal.
Yeah, I was like, oh, it might be aliens.
Egos when weird. I get home. Egos.
Yeah, I was just like, man, that is strange.
Right.
But what? How can you do this privately?
What do you mean privately?
Like,
you need help from the government. There's like, no way you're going to do it.
Yeah, you can't just like show up. You can't just show up at a permit office and be like, I'd like to shoot this satellite off into fucking space.
Well,
please.
I don't think it's that easy, but I do think that you can arrange. Of course that you can arrange it. They've done it. But you have to prove that you're capable of doing it. It's just not like, oh, hey, what's going on? Yeah, my name's John Tire Service, and I just thought maybe I'd throw a couple $1,000 towards a rocket because we had a good quarter over here at John's Tire Service. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. How?
There's got to be approval things. Like you have to get approval for your rocket so that nobody's going to – like be around it and it explodes and it kills a dozen people. Like you have, there are procedures.
And he's privy to information about like where other satellites are. Is that private?
Like, I don't think so. No, like, the satellite industry is a big business. Like shooting small satellites into space is something that you could do personally if you had like 30 grand or something like that. It's relatively inexpensive.
If I was just like, yeah, I have this satellite, I want to shoot it off.
Right, and you'd be surprised. Satellites aren't what you're thinking they are. Like a satellite is not what it was when in the 1960s, which was the size of a dump truck, right?
Yeah.
Satellites now are small. It's like drone size.
So like it wouldn't even...
Yeah, yeah.
So like it, like there's no, I guess, is there air traffic control for satellites?
No, it's actually one of the big problems with satellites is actually the concern is that they can't. They're concerned other satellites are going to run into each other. They do know where other satellites are located. They are kind of, you know, roughly tracking it. But like when a satellite goes, they have no process of like throwing it into the Earth's atmosphere and having it burn up. There's nothing they can do. They just kind of.
Yeah, that's a real problem. There was something they were saying that one of the problems that maybe us ultimately getting off the planet
right.
is that there's so much space debris that getting out of the atmosphere will be incredibly dangerous.
Right, so right. So Mehran's basically saying that one of the big concerns is as time progresses, we have thrown so much garbage into space to kind of orbit space, getting out of Earth's atmosphere without hitting other things is going to be a real challenge. So
you have to prep for, and how fast are they traveling around us, a satellite?
How fast are they traveling around the planet?
Yeah, like enough speed to like.
1,000 miles an hour.
You think really? It's that 1,000 miles?
I think it is.
So objects orbiting at the altitude travel about 17,500 miles per hour.
17,000?
Yeah. For example, the GOES system of satellites, which tracks weather and other things, is a geosynchronous orbit, and it's 22,000 miles above the Earth.
So that'll take your head off a couple times.
Yes, but like in space, it's very different than on planet Earth. It's like... Yes, if you get hit with it, you're probably dead, but it's not like you're staying still in space either.
Right.
Right, Mehran? Am I right about this? Yeah, you're always moving. Like, you don't stop.
Yeah.
It's a giant vacuum. There's no gravity. The only gravity that you're feeling is the mass of the Earth and probably the mass of the sun, potentially the mass of the other major objects in space that are actually pulling and in you in all different directions. But it's so slight, you wouldn't know it. You'd feel the mass of Earth more than anything. And that's what would pull you back to Earth, where you would then burn up into the Earth. Unless you're traveling at a high enough rate of speed and at an angle that actually jettisons you out of Earth's orbit. Right?
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. Wow. It's not as simple as like, oh, you're going to go fast and get hit with something like, you're always moving, but in space, you to stop or to slow down, you need something with something that is equal or greater.
Like a retro rocket.
Yeah, you need something that's going to slow you down.
Do you think that Elon is an alien?
No. I think Elon is South African.
But you don't think he's an alien?
An alien?
Yeah. People think that his obsession with sending things into space is ultimately about how he can get back to his planet.
Dude, this is pseudo. This is fake news.
I'm just telling you what people say.
Yeah, people are stupid. That's a dumb statement, and I want to slap those people. I want to say that. If you believe that truly, I want to slap you, and I'm sorry that you are that dumb.
What is his obsession with space?
What is the obsession with space for any scientist that thinks about space? The only reason he's... So are you telling me that... who else is obsessed with space? Who's the physicist that everybody loves?
Hawking?
No, the one from New York.
Yeah, the one from New York.
Neil.
Yeah, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Is he an alien? He loves space. He talks about it all the time.
He's not sending rockets into space.
He can't afford to send rockets into space. But because Elon Musk is worth $1 billion, he immediately is an alien? This is so ridiculous. I can't even believe I'm having this conversation. I am upset right now. I am mad.
I'm not saying I think that.
But
I'm
you're perpetrating.
You
but
what
you're,
you
but
think
you're,
about that.
I think it's nonsense. People, no.
He's not an alien.
Why? What? You keep asking me this question?
Does
he do alien things?
What do you have? Do you know what the satellite was for?
What was the SOCOM satellite? They announced what the satellite did. Yeah. It was in like both this company. One of the big things that this satellite company is doing, SpaceX, and the Amazon startup. What is it? Blue what? Blue Horizon or something?
Blue Falcon.
Whatever is it? Falcon something. the big thing they're doing, and it's that that makes them very popular, is that they are creating rockets that actually come back and land.
Right.
Right now, when they shoot something into space, they just go up into space and they fall and crash, and they can't reuse a lot of those rockets. So these are reusable rockets. These are rockets that they're able to land. They're able to have come back and land in a specific spot after reentry. And, you know, it's not like a, it's not like the space shuttle that lands. This is literally like shoots up and then it comes back down. And then they can refill it with fuel and shoot it back up and bring it back down. Shoot, refill with fuel, load it back up, shoot it back up, and bring it right back down. So the idea is that it is a reusable ship. And that's one of the really expensive parts of creating spaceships, is that idea that they have to rebuild everything again.
So they, yeah, so they just want to be able to lower the cost of space exploration.
Yeah, so like if you're able to right now, Dan, are you able to look up and see what it costs to shoot a gallon of water into space, into Earth's orbit? Sorry, my computer's about to die, or I'd do it. But the cost to shoot something like that, like a gallon of water into space, or a pound of something, there's like a pound, there's some kind of number attached to it, is so crazy high that we will never break that until we determine a way to lower the costs of doing that.
$10,000 per pound for a space shuttle cargo.
Right. So there you go. So $10,000 per pound. So to give you an idea, a gallon of milk is how much does that weigh? A gallon of milk is 7 pounds. So for you to send a gallon of milk into space, 70 grand.
Jesus. There's a gallon of water at 8.33 pounds quickly makes Chanel number 5 a bargain.
Right, 8.33 pounds.
$25,000 per gallon.
Okay, so maybe it's less than than 10,000 a pound. Cuz if it's 25 for 8, then, you know, maybe it's economy of scale. Right. Absolutely. There's like Amazon's got a cheap way to deliver things, right? Right.
So SpaceX believes that rocket reusability is the key breakthrough needed to reduce the cost of access to space and enable people to live on other planets.
Well, there's a couple things needed, but reusable rockets is a big one. Being able to pre-supply things on other planets is a big one. And then living over that extended period of travel time is a big one. If you're able to reduce travel times, that's helpful. But there's no way to fully protect ourselves from the elements of space. So, you know, radiation, things that are in open space are actually pretty harmful to the human body. They've done studies with that stuff. And it's really, really hard on your body. So they did a test. I think one astronaut was a twin.
Mm-hmm.
And then they compared the twin who was up in space for, I think it was like, I don't know, like 6 months, 8 months, something like that. And then they brought him back and they compared him to his genetic brother. And he had aged faster because of the elements of space. What was the name of this guy? Twin astronaut. Twin astronaut. Here we go. Yeah, the Kelly. They're identical twins. But here we go. This is interesting. So I think did we talk about this? The twins in space.
We may have.
There's an old podcast where we actually talk about this, but they're identical twins, just to kind of re-update you. They're both astronauts. But one of them stayed in space for a year, and they wanted to test and see what the psychological conditions were of each of them after it. But apparently there were things that happened in their body. I wasn't prepared for this, so I don't know what it is.
A year.
But there's genetic. They noticed genetic changes. Whole genome sequences of Mark and Scott revealed that both twins had hundreds of unique genetic mutations while they were in space.
Wow.
Because when you have an identical twin, everything about you is the same.
Yeah. And now they weren't.
Yeah. Anyway, but that we talked about that at another on another podcast.
Do you think that privatized space travel is dangerous?
I think it's inevitable.
That non-government space travel.
Absolutely. I think it's inevitable. I think it's inevitable because the demands of humanity, their needs, are more than what the planet can provide.
Mm-hmm.
So privatized companies with large amounts of money are going to be the first people to extend where we're at right now.
Yeah, like who can...
So the government is not going to be sending people away from their own government.
Can the government say you can't leave Earth?
They could.
But can they?
They could.
Can you tell someone they're not allowed to go to Earth?
I mean, like, look at it this way.
To leave Earth?
Let's reverse this thought. When people were coming to the New World, they were coming as big corporations.
Mm-hmm.
They were coming as privatized businesses that were looking to trade and build off of that. So they would come. Did those countries want them to do that? Yes and no. But then they realized as time progressed that these people broke off and started their own governments anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Could the government tell you no? Yeah, they could. The government could tell you no about a lot of things. They could tell you not to buy guns.
Mm-hmm.
They could tell you to, you know, they could tell you that you can't own a car anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is. Anyway. But that's what we got, man.
Thousands of years, hundreds of years later, after Columbus, still exploring.
Yep. Next frontier, baby. Space. Here we go.
Out of this world. Thanks for listening and laughing with the Dan and Cody podcast. Our email is danandcodypodcast@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We are on Instagram @DanCodyPodcast. Check out our website, danandcody.com, and you can contribute to the podcast by going to patreon.com/DanCodyPodcast.
Subscribe, bitch!
Ain't nobody played itself down the shit, bro. Right.